スデバヤ。Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So we're reading from the 65th chapter of the 10th canto. The chapter is entitled Lord Balaram Visits Vrindavan. And this is in the wrong place. I'm supposed to read, I think, from text 10 to text 15. And I hope that's right. Does Keshava seem to tell me? Yes, it is. Okay. So text 10 to text 15. Which one's up there? Okay, so we'll chant text 10. Let's chant 15 together responsively. We'll just chant from 10 to 15 together. So everybody ready? 1, 2, 3.
Kachit smarati vai bandhun pitaram mataram chasa apyasau mataram drasum sakrit apyagamishyati apiva smarate sa anusevam mahabhuja.
Does he remember, the gopis are speaking, does he remember his family members, especially his father and mother? Do you think he will ever come back even once to see his mother? And does mighty armed Krishna remember the service we always did for him? Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments that the gopis would render service to Lord Krishna by stringing flower garlands, skillfully using perfumes, and constructing fans, beds, and canopies out of flower petals. By these simple acts of love, the gopis rendered the greatest service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 11 through 12 together.
Mataram pitaram bratrin patim putran sasrin api yat arte jahima darsha dushyagya svajana prabho tana sadhya parit Yaja Gatak Sanchina Surida Katam Nutadrisham Sribhir Nashadhiyeta Bashitam.
For Krishna, translation, for Krishna's sake, O descendant of Dashara, we abandoned our mothers, fathers, brothers, husbands, children, and sisters, even though these family relations are difficult to give up. But now, O Lord, that same Krishna has suddenly abandoned us and gone away, breaking off all affectionate ties with us. And yet, how could any woman fail to trust his promises? Text 13.
Katang Jnatmano Vacha Krita Jnana Sabuddha Prashita Grinanti vai chitra katasya sundara smita baloka chvisita smaratara.
How can intelligent Sinni women possibly trust the words of one whose heart is so unsteady and who is so ungrateful? They must believe him because he speaks so wonderfully and also because his beautiful smiling glances arouse their lust. Purport. According to Sridhar Swami, some gopis speak the first two lines of this verse, and others reply in the second two lines. Text 14.
Kim nastad kataya gopya kata katya tapapara yatya smabhir vinakalo yadhitasya tataivana.
Why bother talking about him, dear gopis? Please talk of something else. If he passes his time without us, then we shall similarly pass ours without him, purport. Srila Sridhar Swami points out that the gopis, you know what, I think I was only supposed to read till 14, anyway. Srila Sridhar Swami points out that the gopis here subtly indicate that Lord Krishna spends his time happily without them, whereas they are most unhappy without their Lord. This is the difference between him and them. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti adds the following commentary. Considering themselves different from other women, the gopis thought as follows. If other women are together with their lovers, they live, and if they are separated, they die. But we neither live nor die. That is the fate Providence has written on our foreheads. What remedy can we find? And you know, I would think I was only supposed to go to 14. So I'm going to stop there. And was I? You sure? Okie dokie. It's a deal. All right, so let's chant responsively. Iti prahasitam sarer. Jalpitam charu vikshitam. Gating prema parisvandam. Smartan smarantyo rurudhu shriya. Iti prahasitam sare. Japitam charu vikshitam. Katim prema parisvangam. Smarantyo rurudhu shriya. Vaishnavas? Iti prahasitam sare. Japitam charu vikshitam. Pratim prema parishvangam. Smarantyo rurudhu shriya. Iti prahasitam sare. Japitam charu vikshitam. Pratim prema parishvangam. Smarantyo rurudhastriya. Iti prahasitam sare. Japitam charu vikshitam. Patim prema parishvangam. Smarantyo rurudhu shriya. Vaishnavi? Iti prahasitam sare. Jalpitam charu vikshitam. Ratim prema parishangam. Maram charu rudusriya. Iti prahasitam sare. Japitam charu vikshitam. Prema parishangam. Smaram charu rudusriya. Okay. Iti. Thus speaking. Prahasitam. The laughter. Shore. Of Lord Krishna. Japitam, the pleasing conversations. Charu, attractive. Vikshitam, the glances. Gatim, the walking. Prema, yes, yeah, just as prema walking. Loving. Parishvangam, the embrace. Smarantya, remembering. Rurudho, crying. Shriya, the women. Translation. While speaking these words, the young cowherd women remembered Lord Sari's laughter, his pleasing conversations with them, his attractive glances, his style of walking, and his loving embraces. Thus, they began to cry. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments as follows. The gopis thought, the Krishna moon, after piercing our hearts with the darts of his nectarine laughter, went away. So how will the city woman not die when he does the same to them? Overwhelmed with these thoughts, the young cowherd girls began to cry, even in the presence of Sri Baladeva. Mukam Kuruti Bachalam, Pangam, Mangaya Tegidin, Nakripa, Samaham Vande, Shri Guru, Tanakam, Om Adinata, Miranda, Chevin, and Minash, Akara, Saksu, Rindu, Tangin, Tasma, Shri Guru, Ramana. Hare Krishna, another interesting set of verses. These pastimes here are very difficult to understand, very difficult to understand in their completeness because they're extremely deep. And my understanding is superficial at best. So I was concerned with what is the process for developing a deeper understanding of these verses or these pastimes that are mentioned about Krishna and the gopis in particular, that because his most intimate devotees, those people who are in his family directly or in very close loving relationships with him, their relationships with him are unique and very easy to misunderstand because they appear to be very similar to the relationships that we have in the material world. And so the tendency might be to consider that these relationships are ordinary, that Krishna is just an ordinary guy. He breaks the heart of the girls. He goes from this country to the city, and even some of the conversation of the gopis as they speak about the city girls and the way they look at things, and we are just country girls, the way we look at things. It sounds very ordinary, and so there's tremendous danger in walking through these verses, which is one of the reasons, or the main reason, why Srila Prabhupada gave us Krishna book, because he didn't want us to walk through this 10th canto on our own. And he was very aware that he might not be here in his physical form to walk with us through these verses. So therefore, he wrote the Krishna book in order to help us to understand. But that being said, now because we have the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam and we're talking about the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam verse by verse, where I often feel very much, I lecture in a lot of places. I travel all over the place. And, this is one of the few temples, I think someone mentioned it not when I was here last, but this is one of the few temples that has ventured into the canto's past where Srila Prabhupada translated himself and purported the verses. So we're kind of like, navigating in waters which are not as chartered as some of the other waters we enter into. And so in exploring Prabhupada's instructions on how to develop a deep understanding of these verses, it was very interesting what I came up with. And even looking at this particular verse and what's happening here, because Lord Balaram has come to help the gopis in their feelings of separation from Krishna. And he's following in the wake of somebody else who already came to do the same thing, unsuccessful in his attempt. But now he's coming, and you'll see in the next verse that Balaram says he has a unique ability to do this because he's not, he's the older brother of Krishna, and so he can give Krishna orders, whereas Uddhava couldn't really do that. And he's going to go back and order Krishna to come back to Vrindavan. So the gopis feel good about that. But understanding that Krishna chose certain people to speak to the gopis, and even of those people, they have different qualifications and different lessons to be learned and different reasons that Krishna sent each of them. So looking at that, and then also looking at how to understand what's going on, how to understand what's going on in this 10th canto, just in general. I was interested to hear what Srila Prabhupada said. So one thing that Prabhupada said is, he says, you know, we heard the other day, or the other day, for me that's like 3 weeks ago, we heard that, I think it was from Janmashtami, that the most important verse, he said, the most important verse. I couldn't find a quote where Prabhupada said it was the most important verse. But he definitely says that if we understand it, we can go back to Goloka. So that verse is Janma Karma Chame Divyam, that one who understands the pastimes of Krishna and the reason for his appearance, his transcendental, his Divyam Leelas, then that person who understands them deeply, that person doesn't have to take birth again. So that understanding, we can imagine, we read in the Nectar of Devotion, that Krishna doesn't give pure devotional service easily, because people who have pure devotional service, they can control Krishna. So Krishna is not, doesn't hand it out easily, because he's controlled by them, and we can understand that. If someone was going to get control over us, or even, not even us, just let's say our money, or our Facebook account, or you know, whatever, they were going to get our passwords, we go through great lengths to try and make sure that no one figures out what they are, so that they don't get control of something that we want control of, right? So here, in the Nectar of Devotion, Krishna says that, or Rupa Goswami says of Krishna, that bhakti, one who has bhakti, actually controls Krishna. And so Krishna doesn't give pure devotional service very easily. Now, just look at that statement a little bit, that Krishna doesn't award bhakti easily because one who has bhakti can control Krishna, and Krishna doesn't relinquish control of himself easily. So from that, just that statement, you get two very important points. One is that bhakti controls Krishna, and that the devotees who have bhakti control Krishna. But how do they get it? Krishna awards bhakti. Krishna doesn't award bhakti easily because he doesn't want people to control him. So you can't get bhakti on your own. There's nothing you can do to, we discussed this yesterday in our reading, some devotees I read, that bhakti doesn't, it's not something you earn. You can't buy it in the store. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says you can buy it, but the price is lolyam, your desire to have it. And even that, Krishna may raise the price, right? Sometimes we read the small print in the advertisement. It says price is subject to change without notice. So sometimes Krishna may raise the bar and make us jump higher and higher and higher. Look at these gopis. These gopis are at the highest level, and Krishna's making them jump higher than anyone else to have that loving relationship with Krishna. He's putting them in what would be considered to be a very suffering condition, a feeling of separation. We generally think that when someone loves us, they want to be with us. And certainly when we love them, we want to be with them. But here, Krishna is giving the gopis the highest realization, and that's going away and leaving them apparently bereft. So this bhakti is awarded by Krishna. And how do we get it? So Prabhupada, he asks that question rhetorically. And he says, how can it be learned? How can it be had? Simply by service attitude, sevan mukhe. So just by having a service attitude, by acting in service to Krishna, we kind of raise our hand in front of Krishna saying, I'm here and I'm trying to serve you. I want to get bhakti. I want to have love for you. And I want to have your mercy. Please grant me your mercy. So this is the devotee's exchange. Now, as Prabhupada developed this theme over the years, because in 1968 and 1969 and 1970, Srila Prabhupada speaks again and again about the service attitude being manifest in chanting Hare Krishna. That all you have to do is chant Hare Krishna. By chanting Hare Krishna and following sadhana bhakti, the process, he talks about the four regulative principles. He talks about engaging in the different processes he gave us of Krishna consciousness as given in the morning program. And by doing these things, we can become purified. We become qualified to be a recipient of Krishna's mercy. We become a vessel in which Krishna can put his mercy and he can feel safe bestowing bhakti. Because Krishna has to feel safe. If I give my confidential information to somebody, I need to feel safe that they'll handle it properly. If I don't trust them, then everything is guarded, right? Then everything is guarded. Even the body language is guarded, right? When we don't trust somebody. But when we trust, then we open up. Our body language opens up. Our heart opens up. And then we become a qualified recipient. I did it better that time. For the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So as Prabhupada progressed in his preaching or in his speaking to his disciples, or those who were hearing from him, he spoke now beyond the chanting of Hare Krishna. He added something. And he added something which was giving Krishna consciousness to others. Even Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, when he says these on the 12th chapter, he talks about who's dear to him. He says the person most dear is the person who distributes love of God, who talks about love of God to the devotees. And who's the devotees? We may say, well, that means those people who speak in the temple. But in one pastime, Srila Prabhupada was in the airport, and there were many, many devotees there, and there were many, many non-devotees there. And the reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, what's the difference between these people and these people, these people who say that they're your devotees, and the other one? And Prabhupada said, well, actually, they're both devotees. Only difference is these people know it and these people don't. So if you take that definition of devotee, that every living entity is a devotee on some level or another, then the person who shares Krishna consciousness with the devotees, he is the most dear to Krishna. And Krishna sees that person, like he saw Srila Prabhupada, and many other of our predecessor acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur come to mind most, that they took great risks. They took great risks, made great effort to share Krishna consciousness with others. And so Srila Prabhupada, as he speaks, as the years go by, and he gives instructions, he says, how can one become free? How can one develop bhakti? This is Krishna consciousness. Let's just start at the beginning. I can become free, purified by freeing myself from all designations. This is the first step. We are now under different designations. Every one of us is thinking, I am this body. And because I am this body, and this body is produced under certain conditions, in a certain family, in a certain father, mother, in a certain society, certain country, certain land, therefore you have got so many designations. But we have to become, first of all, free from designations. That is the first qualification for understanding the science of God. We have to become free from all designations. And how can we become free? This is Krishna consciousness. I am neither Indian nor American. I am neither white. I am neither black. I am not Christian. I am neither Hindu, Mohammedan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes himself like that. He says, I'm not a Brahmin, Kshatriya. I'm not a Vaishya. I'm not a Sudra. I'm not a Brahmachari. I'm not a householder. I am not a Vanaprastha, nor am I in the renounced order of sannyas. Then who are you? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu answers, Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayor Dasa Dasa Nadasa. I'm a servant of the servant of the servant of the people who serve the gopis who serve Krishna. I am the servant of the servant of the servants of Krishna. This should be my real identification. And this is a very good identification. In Krishna consciousness, We address our contemporaries as Prabhu. Prabhu means master. The real idea is that you are my master and I am your servant. Just the opposite number. Here in the material world, everyone wants to place himself as the master. I am your master. You are my servant. That is the mentality of material existence. And the spiritual existence means I am the servant. You are the master. Therefore, we are canvassing. We are going door to door, country to country, continent to continent, city to city, village to village. Please become Krishna conscious. We are teaching them how you can be happy, Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha, how you can be a man of knowledge. That is our business. We have taken this very difficult task to convince people to take to Krishna consciousness. But that is the only benefit or the supreme goal of life. Krishna personally comes to teach this science. So he says, why has Krishna left the Bhagavad Gita? Why didn't he just have a private conversation with Arjuna? He left the Bhagavad Gita so that other people could read it and become devotees. And so Prabhupada says, we've taken this difficult task to convince people to become Krishna conscious. So as Prabhupada speaks of how to understand these intimate pastimes between Krishna and his devotees, his most intimate devotees, he often speaks about giving Krishna consciousness to others. By giving Krishna consciousness to others, Krishna becomes pleased. And when Krishna becomes pleased, he reveals within our heart, he destroys within our heart the darkness of ignorance, and he reveals the nature of his loving relationships with God. He gives us bhakti. He gives us bhakti, and we understand his loving relationships with his devotees. So the real way to find out, to understand, is not just by studying. Oh, of course, we have to study. We have to read. We have to ponder and contemplate and discuss with devotees. But we also have to give Krishna consciousness to other people. We have to take risks. Somehow or other, we have to stretch ourselves a bit so that Krishna sees our intention and has confidence that by bestowing bhakti on this person and giving this person the ability to control me, it will be a wonderful thing. It will be a wonderful thing. It will be pleasing to me. It will be pleasing to the devotees. So on that note, I would like to share with you an experience that I had last weekend. Because last weekend I was in Chicago and I was at a seminar. And the seminar was entitled, let me just get the right title so I don't say it wrong. The title was Reaching the Hearts and Minds of the Western Public. So there were many devotees at the seminar, over 100. They came from all over the place. They were mostly leaders in North America or preachers in North America. They came from coast to coast, they came from Canada, and His Holiness Radhanath Swami was there, Devamrita Maharaj was there, Ramapad Swami was there, Bhaju Narayan Maharaj was there, Kalakanta Prabhu was there, many, Gopal Bhatta Prabhu was there, many, very exciting and excited preachers were there. And they were there to talk about this, the fact that we need to do a better job of reaching the hearts and minds of Western people. It's interesting that a lot of the people were there were Indians, of Indian descent, as Devamrita Maharaj refers to them as the low-hanging fruit. Actually, this seminar was inspired by a seminar that Devamrita Maharaj gave at the ILS, which is another leadership gathering in Mayapur, 2 years ago. So that seminar that he gave was talking about the low-hanging fruit, that we have all these people who are by nature or by birth, they're exposed to some level of Krishna consciousness, and they have a culture which supports supporting people who are giving or practicing bhakti. And so by nature, they're trained from very young age to give donations and to you know, to give time, to maybe give some energy to a bag of sugar, some rice, some chapati flour. They're trained like that, to give a certain amount of support to people who are preaching. But then there's the high fruit, the fruit of people who have no qualification, but we have to make their qualification. And those were the people that Prabhupada came to the West to distribute love of God to, and he had a whole strategy, right? Because that strategy was that because the West is the bastion of heaven and hell, right? From the West, we learn all about Coca-Cola and iPads and all kinds of other silly things. We learn how to use Roundup and destroy the earth, and we learn so many things. But everybody follows the styles, the talk, the the way things are presented. It's all a package which has been presented by the Western world via media and received by the rest of the world and embraced very, very ardently as a goal, the goal of human life. The goal of human life is to get stuff. So Prabhupada thought, well, I'm going to take this Western group of people and I'm going to move them into a situation where they will give Krishna, because everybody follows them. So if they lead to Krishna, then everyone will follow them there. And that was Prabhupada's strategy. And actually, it worked. It talked about at the seminar that Prabhupada brought his Western devotees to India, and they didn't know anything about India except through Prabhupada. But in bringing them to India, he trained them how to present Krishna consciousness to the Indians, and then the people of India, and then he inspired many, many Indian people to take up Krishna consciousness. And we see even here in America, I think I told you the story that I was giving a class to 50 people, all from India, every one of them, in Washington, D.C. And I asked the question, how many of you knew about Krishna or actually took up the process of Krishna consciousness before you came to America? And not one person raised their hand. Not one. So here you had 50 Indian persons born in India, NRIs. They all, non-resident Indians, they all came to this country looking for a place where the streets are paved with gold, and you know, and you can, there's lots of upward mobility, and you can get a good job as an IT professional, and they found Krishna. They found Krishna because Prabhupada's devotees, Western devotees, were preaching Krishna consciousness. So this seminar was focused on the idea that, okay, now that's all great. We've done that, and we're doing that, and that's very, very necessary. But what about the original audience that Prabhupada wanted to approach? Are we really approaching them? Are we reaching these people? And maybe we're not. And how can we do a better job of it? What do we need to do? And it's a many, many faceted trajectory, because we can give someone a book. And that's certainly a great start. They'll read a book. And then what happens if they want to take up the process of Krishna consciousness? And they come to a Hare Krishna temple and no one ever talks to them. Or, they can't relate to anything. They don't know what's happening on the altar, and they don't know what's happening on their plate. And you know, when they get their prasadam, they don't know what it is. It's too hot. It's too oily. It's too whatever it is. But they don't know what it is. It's foreign, right? And the language is foreign, and the dress is foreign, and assuming they get to talk to somebody, maybe they get to talk to somebody, then how are they introduced? How are they supported in their spiritual life? And that's only contact one or two or three or four. What happens long term? What happens, where do they go? How do they, when I became a devotee, I moved into the ashram and, immediately started fully practicing the process of sadhana bhakti, because I had a very nurturing environment. It was like a big family, and you know, we were all together all the time. Everybody called everybody Prabhu. I think I might have mentioned to you that we had a standard in our temple that if you didn't call somebody Prabhu, you voluntarily fasted all day. Everybody called everybody Prabhu because everybody wanted to see everybody else's master. It wasn't like someone comes to me, someone made a comment that, you know, now I ask people, what do they want to be called? Well, what devotee is going to say, I want to be called Prabhu? What's wrong with that picture, right? How can a devotee say, I want to be called Prabhu? You should call me Prabhu, because I'm your servant. That's why I want to be called Prabhu. So there's something fundamentally wrong with that, isn't there? So we've lost a little bit, and you know, then there's the discussion that our movement has grown so much and it's become much more of an institution. It requires management, it requires organization. We were a very unorganized movement at the beginning, so if you were afraid of joining an organized religion, you didn't have to worry because we were totally unorganized, so it was perfectly fine. But now we're trying, you know, to become a little bit organized, and that has its ups, and it also has its downs. An organization is a scary thing, and a lot of people don't like organized anything. But it has to be somewhat organized, because if it wasn't organized, you'd flick on the light and no one would have paid the bill, and you know, that feast that you wait online to get wouldn't be there waiting for you to be served out by 5 or 6 or 7 or 12 people that are standing there in the row, and you wouldn't get all the emails inviting you to all the festivals and so on and so forth. The deities wouldn't be dressed so beautifully and every day at the same exact time. So there is need for some organization. But we can't let the organization destroy the family nature of what Prabhupada gave us. And so somehow or other, we have to work on bringing Westerners, we have to find out what their needs are. We have to find out what their needs are and what our opportunities are to give them, to serve their needs, and then to craft. And I use that word very carefully, to craft, because it's an art. We have to figure out in each circumstance, perhaps for each person, but at least within each place, we have to craft a way to carry this fruit from the top of the tree all the way into prema bhakti. And this is what this gathering of Vaishnavas was about. It was a very enlightening and enlivening experience. Some of it seems to be, it's like in what existed naturally before now has to be recreated. It's like now we have something else. We have to recreate that situation that we had before. So that means before it was organic, and now we have to, it's just like, so we have to go back to natural organic methods of farming, because we used to farm that way and we used to eat, you know, that way. We didn't have to like worry about non-GMO, GMO stuff growing in our garden. But then it moved in another direction and it became very commercial and very institutionalized and very controlled by big government, and then it became something else. So now we have to artificially create a way that we can grow things, and sometimes we have to, you know, fight for seeds even in order to grow things. So naturally, so in our own spiritual movement, we have to fight for going back to the grassroots way of presenting Krishna consciousness as it is, and as Prabhupada gave it to us, so that people feel that same kind of family atmosphere. They feel that same kind of warmth, that same kind of welcome mood, and they grow in Krishna consciousness with loving exchanges between devotees. And so we discussed many things. All the lectures and all the seminars are online. If you go to ISKCON Chicago, they have a whole YouTube section with just their stuff, and you can find it there, all the different seminars that were given. But it was very enlivening just to know that it was being thought about. that people were talking about, and that there's an effort being made to do this level of outreach, this level of exchange, this desire to please Krishna. And because Prabhupada gave us this responsibility, Prabhupada asked us to do this. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur asked Prabhupada to preach in the West. And Prabhupada, inspired by the verse, Vyavyasikatnika Budhir, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on that verse, that the order of the spiritual master should be taken as one's life and soul, and that one should meditate on that order with a laser-like focus. One pointed, Ekaiha Kurunandana, thank you. That we have to focus our intelligence on that verse. So on that order. So our order from Srila Prabhupada is learn, become expert, and give it to others. That was Srila Prabhupada told Bhojan Prabhu that. You should learn something. And then, and it also comes out in Jamuna's book, Jamuna Devi's book, repeatedly, learn it, become expert in it, and share it with others. So if we want people to become scholars, we can share with them in a scholarly way. But if we want them to become bhaktas, then we have to share with them the process of bhakti. We have to share with them the process that Prabhupada gave us to develop love for Krishna. And that's a process that absorbs everything we do, the way we eat, the way we sleep, the way we get up, the way we relate to each other, the way people see us exchanging with each other, the atmosphere that we create by our behavior and by our desire, our determination. All these things will provide the ambience and the habitat. There's a nice expression, I think Vaisheshika Prabhu came up with it, but he wasn't there, because he's writing a book, but it was spoken of, this bhakti habitat, that like a culture, like in a petri dish culture where something grows. So a bhakti habitat is a place where bhakti can grow, a habitat which facilitates permaculture, where bhakti permaculture. That, and it's really the permaculture, because it's the only permanent culture, is that we grow bhakti and go back to Godhead. Everything else is not perma. I don't know what they call it, perma, but it's not perma because it's attached to the material world. We get permaculture is in the spiritual world. That's where we get our permanent culture. So we should become culturists or horticulturalists of the bhakti lata beach. Lord Chaitanya uses that expression, that you plant the seed and it grows all the way up through the coverings of the material world back to the lotus feet of Krishna. And that's what we need to do, and we need to figure out how to do it. So each center, of which Alachua is huge, by the way, and was conspicuous by its absence at this gathering, that we should figure out here what we can do, and we should start doing it. And It happens when people decide to do something to swim upstream. Prabhupada swam upstream, right? He could have been Krishna conscious in Vrindavan, and he could have developed his bhakti in Vrindavan, certainly Rupa Goswami's place, and all the Goswami place there at Radha Damodar was such a nurturing atmosphere, certainly a bhakti habitat. But Srila Prabhupada had that extreme need, just like Prahlad Maharaj, right? Prahlad Maharaj, that's why Prabhupada loved Prahlad Maharaj so much. He spoke about Prahlad Maharaj so much. He loved Prahlad Maharaj because Prahlad Maharaj, he could have avoided all the trouble with Hiranyakashipu if he was just a closet Krishna, right? If he didn't go blabbing it all to the kids in his school and trying to get them to, be subversives and chant and dance and under Sandan Marka's nose, he could have gotten away without having to be trampled by elephants and thrown from cliffs and stomped on by, bitten by snakes and all these things. But he felt so much compassion for his classmates that he could not remain silent. He could not remain silent. And so he underwent so much torture on their behalf. And then at the end, when the Sringadev actually appeared from the pillar, and no one would go near him, even Lakshmi, because he was so angry, Prahlad Maharaj walked over to him. And when he was given a benediction, right after Nrsingadev patted him with his paw, and they had this loving exchange, then Nrsingadev asked him, "For what do you want? I'll give you anything." He said, "Will you please take care of my father? Please." And his father was the one who had tortured him. So that kind of compassion, Prabhupada was so appreciative, and Krishna is so appreciative. And so if to connect it back to this 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that if we're, and another, just one other thing, is that this is Lord Balaram. Balaram is Nityananda. And Nityananda is the epitome of this compassionate mercy, of being able to give Krishna to others and figure out just what they need, huh? Just what they need, whether it's, you know, please chant Hare Krishna, worship Krishna, you know, whether it's that humble mood or whether it's something else, breaking the danda, whatever it is, Nityananda is expert at giving the mercy. So we have to take up that mood, and then we'll get the privilege of understanding these relationships between Krishna and his devotees. We'll be able to enter into this lila. So I'm a little late. I'll stop here, and if there's any questions, I'll try to answer.
I'm happy to see you, Mother.
I'm happy to see you, Prima. You walked in right at the right moment.
I have a dream.
Uh-oh.
Last week with you, we were somewhere preaching, so I woke up in ecstasy. I was serving you, actually. But you know what? I was thinking, you know, let's say we're 1,000 families in this community. If each family just opened the house and give loving exchanges of love, because Krishna is love, to people, we can make 1,000 devotees in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I get out of the class, I was getting a text from my friend Michelle,
mm-hmm,
that she's applying in the school here.
Oh.
It took a year for her to move to Alachua.
Gotcha.
And I met her in a cooking class.
Uh-huh.
And it took a year of cultivation of care and loving affection. She used to tell me, "Why are you so nice to me?" I said, "Because you're a devotee of Krishna." So everybody's out there, they're devotees of Krishna. I have a friend also that came to the Festival of Colors. He stayed in my house, and I was feeding him tea at night, and I gave him a massage in his feet, and he was crying. He told me, "Why are you giving him so much love?" He's reading Bhagavad Gita now. So if each of us open the house to somebody and invite, this is Namahata, Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, this Krishna consciousness is going to spread through Namahata.
Mm-hmm.
And we bring people to our home, because our home is not our home, it's Krishna's home. Krishna, mm-hmm, lives in our home. And people feel the love of Krishna, they automatically remember their devotees of Krishna. You don't even have to preach to them. So if we in this community just open a little room, we have a guest room, and we invite people, "Come to my house, and then I bring you to the springs." That's what I did last year, and you know, like 5-6 people from Orlando, they're chanting already Hare Krishna, they want to move to Alachua. It's not that I'm preaching, it's that I'm giving them Prabhupada's love in the form of caring affection. So can you imagine if each of us, we open a guest house in our room, and we cultivate people like that, we can make 500 of those higher fruits, you know, that are out there.
Yeah, and then we have to bring them to the temple, and the temple also has to become Krishna's house, exactly, where we warmly welcome people and inspire people and develop people. This other devotee, he had his hand up.
Yes.
What's your name, Prabhu?
Invite people to your home and bring people to Krishna.
What's your name, Prabhu?
Bhakta Christopher.
Bhakta Christopher, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. Going to the east versus West issue. If God is God in all infinite names and forms, but at the same time and paradoxically we're supposed to be above all designations, then to neophyte people coming to Krishna consciousness, isn't that the paradox that is the obstacle between, you know, the universality and the designations, because they are going to see the cultural designations that are inherent in Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. So how do preachers or true devotees overcome that obstacle? Thank you.
It doesn't have to be an obstacle. When I thank you for your question. When I first became a devotee, which was, by the way, in 1968-69, devotees were wearing somewhat devotional clothes, almost, maybe. I don't know what devotional clothes are, because clothes aren't devotional, but the kind of clothes that we wear to the temple. that we never thought of it as Indian. We just, it didn't even occur to us that it had anything to do with India. It was just the attire that we wore as Krishna's devotees, just like, you know, the robes of a monk or a nun or whatever. If they become an obsession, or they become what matters, and not only robes are just one thing, there's so many other things, then perhaps we've kind of lost the flavor, you know, and we've gotten too much into the externals and not sufficiently into the internals. So we have to be careful about that. It's constant adjustment. It's not like we're going to fix it now and then it's going to be perfect forever. It requires constant adjustment. So it has to be constantly assessed. And, you know, maybe we've been thinking about something else for the last 30 years, so we're 30 years behind in our adjustment, or 20 years. We need to keep tweaking it, because nothing works forever. You know, you look at the marketing strategy of anything in the world, and the product may be there for many, many years, but the way it's marketed is completely changed because of the, you know, the demographics, or the millennials and the whatever, blah, blah, I don't know all those terminologies, but they each have a different way of receiving. Just like if you're preaching or you're speaking to a corporate, people in a corporate situation, you're going to dress and act in one way. And if you're preaching or speaking to a bunch of people at the Grateful Dead concert, you know, in Moby Grape and all those guys over in San Francisco, you're going to dress and act in a different way. So we need to keep adjusting and tweaking it and remembering the essence and not losing the essence. That's another thing that was very much discussed, is preserving the essence. It's not that we're going to water down the essence. We just have to make it receivable so that people can take it and feel comfortable to carry it home. Hare Krishna. Yes.
Yeah, I've got a question. I mean, do you think that maybe the lack of recognition of the movement in the West is due to the fact that we don't have a visible leader like the Dalai Lama or the Pope or something like that?
Well, first of all, I beg to differ. We have a very visible leader, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And under Srila Prabhupada, we have also other leaders in various areas who take quite active roles in leadership. Maybe here we don't have one particular person. Maybe we have many. I don't know. But we all have to be leaders. And within our sphere, like, you know, if I'm a student at the university, then I can be a leader in my university. Many people are becoming Buddhists. Buddhism is one of the fastest growing non-religions in the world right now. And they don't have a leader that is a live person. And then leaders have their ups and downs, you know. And so it may be helpful, certainly, to have a charismatic person. But we do. We have Srila Prabhupada. And you know, within each of us, there's a little bit of leadership. And then some of us have taken more leadership. So I think we can point to leaders within our movement. We can become leaders. I think for me, I have to say that when I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I was a spiritual searcher, not a spiritual searcher, a religious searcher. And I went to many temples, churches, et cetera, et cetera. And they had, I mean, I don't know who the leader is in Judaism, for instance, Moses. You know, there's no real leader there. The rabbi, I never met him. I didn't know who he was. And the guy who's, you know, the person, the rabbi was giving the sermon, he was totally unapproachable. And I was raised in a Jewish family. Then I went, the reason I brought it up is because I went to St. Patrick's Cathedral on Christmas Eve in New York. It's one of the biggest churches there is. And there was a line going around the block two times to get in to this event. And that was one of the most disappointing experiences I had in my spiritual quest. Because first of all they talked about was supporting our boys in Vietnam, which was the last thing I wanted to hear. But also, I found that the leader, he didn't embody what I embodied as a Christ-like life. And when I came in contact with the devotees, they were living in a tiny little house. And it was not particularly gorgeous either. But what impressed me the most was that they lived what they talked about. And because they did that, because they lived what they talked about, I became a devotee. Because I found somebody who didn't just tell me that I had to go to church on Sunday and hear this stuff, but I had to live it. And that changed my life. So I think leaders are good, and we should all be leaders. And I don't think we have a charismatic leader in Srila Prabhupada also. With the real Prabhu, please stand up.
Well, I don't know if this is a question or an observation, but in my travels and sharing Krishna consciousness, I interact with a lot of people that aren't directly in ISKCON. Mm-hmm. And I met one young girl who's a professional healthcare provider and a yoga teacher, and she actually spent time really trying to be a devotee of Krishna at the California temples. She went to each one, spent time, and she shared with me that the challenges she faced as a young woman coming to ISKCON in North America. And I think one of the things that we need to be looking at in recreating our family environment is the hierarchy and the sexism and the racism that are alive and well, that are very strong in many of our centers and many of our leaders. Mm-hmm. And Alach was probably, you know, the most distant from that, those challenges, but they're very much there in many places.
It came up at the meeting.
Okay, and I hadn't been back to India for 24 years until a couple years ago, and I was in shock by our new ISKCON caste system. Mm-hmm. And I would look at that and say, these are the biggest hindrances for this younger generation and younger women becoming devotees of ISKCON in
there, that this came up at the meeting. We discussed, Kalakanta Prabhu actually brought it up. You know, there's successes, like the Bhakti Center has had successes with many, many really qualified women of various professions, and they're, yeah, in the end. And also, there's in Toronto, Devamrita Maharaj's places are doing very well. So there are places, and there are situations, and part of that is also coming from this low-hanging fruit, which carries with it a certain culture, which is over and above what Prabhupada gave us. We're under and above, or under and below what Prabhupada gave us. So we have to work on that. And, you know, it is talked about, though. Especially in the West, it's talked about. You know, in India, I don't know if it's talked about. They don't want to talk about it. But in the West, it's definitely being talked about. And that's all I can say. I mean, I agree with you. It has to be addressed. Madame Mohan, finally, yes.
I just had a wondered if Krishna West, that they've been talking about this idea for a while, if they were represented and how.
There were some people there. Krishna West specifically was not represented. But Krishna West isn't doing anything terribly different than what a lot of other people are doing, really. I mean, it has a name, and they're trying to set up as if it has a unique identity, but it doesn't really have a unique identity. They're doing the same thing as many other people are doing.
It seemed when they originally brought up the idea, there was some resistance to it. So that's what
think what the resistance was is that it was the extreme on the polarity management scale. That, that because it was made to seem more extreme than it actually is. And Krishna West has a lot of really good ideas, which are already being put into place by them and other people. So it doesn't need to be, it shouldn't be fanatical one way or the other. It should be that we take those things that are favorable to bhakti and we leave those things that aren't. And we don't have to have laws about it. We just have to do it.
Sometimes when an idea of necessity is seen, it's hard to introduce it without making it dramatical to get the attention.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Okay, I should stop. It's late. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glories to Srila Prabhupada.